And we are building every day houses, some has been called, on second floor over a vacant lot. We have not yet recognized the simple fact that an education is the release of integrities into manifestation. It is allowing things to grow in their proper order. It is the possibility of reaching out across an interval and shaking hands. Every step towards confusion is a retrograde motion. Every irritation, every political uproar, every war, and material or economic disaster is a proof of wrong. It is the fact that we are not getting the facts of life. Bacon points this out clearly, very definitely, in the Novum Organum, that the actual answer to all these things must be that when we look over the world as it is, we see that the world as it is unselfish, intelligent, cooperative, and kind. Until it's these things, we haven't got a world. We have one. The world, nothing wrong with the world. The tulips still grow in the fields. They have what left of them. The forests are still here until we finally cut them all down. We have a little petroleum left, but we're wasting it pretty heavily at this time. But all these things are here. And yet, at the time when we had all we needed of all of them, we had no peace. If we had two oil wells, we wanted our neighbor's well also. We are now out making new strategies to how to control somebody else and their money, and success is measured entirely on this basis. Well, the mind inside of us, the intellect, the actual inner intelligence, the intellectual part of our nature, knows that this is wrong. And yet, knowing it is wrong, it has no way of making this fact available. It does not have the selling power. The selling power is that the dictator who controls other people can abscond with a few $5 or $10 billion and live happily ever afterwards. Well, he doesn't live happily ever afterwards. But the theory goes on. The theory of the use of the mind by the individual to exploit other individuals. This is the misuse, the basic misuse of mental energy. And if we continue to do it this way, we will gradually destroy the very things we consider most important. After a while, the mind, sickened by this procedure, gives up the fight. It simply collapses of its own pressures. And we have the individual who goes to narcotics and then later commits suicide or dies as a result of drugs. These things are not reasonable in a world such as we are in. This is not a terrible, distorted civilization. It is a bunch of selfish people suffering. It is a group of mistakes ruling a world that is tired of mistakes. It goes on and on and on because no one settles down to the essential values of living. And that brings us, of course, to the philosophic empire. That brings us to the point of trying to use knowledge to live rather than to use it to kill. If we use half as much energy building as we do use now tearing down, we would have a very different world. Now, nature is going to keep on with this procedure. Nature is going to keep on showing us what happens when we misuse a blessed truth. That we take the power of the mind within ourselves to lead us in ways of peace and tranquility and insist on misusing it, corrupting it, and changing it into a gangster. We do this not because the mind itself actually changes. The mind still sends out what little message it can. But in the moment that message is brought to the consciousness begins to figure out how to apply it selfishly and continue the destructive procedures. Now, in the Indian philosophy, which is pretty well mature, we find that the Arupa Manas, or the higher mind, is the repository of the ego itself, that part of the individual which we call the person. The person, therefore, rests in the field of mind. At the time of decarnation, a passage out of the physical body, through the etheric zones, through the emotional body, and finally comes to the mental body. And as it ascends through the mental body, it goes to sleep. It goes to sleep because it has not yet gained the vibratory strength to continue to exist consciously in the higher atmosphere of the mind. It goes to sleep when it can no longer be conscious as the mind wants to be conscious. In other words, it may stay awake through those levels of the mind which are selfish and self-centered. But when it comes to the humanitarian impulses of universal sympathies and understanding, the mind simply goes to sleep. It doesn't go to sleep because it fails. It goes to sleep simply because it has no vehicle to work with. If the lower mind is not developed, the higher mind cannot manifest through it. And as the higher mind must manifest to vitalize the mental level of human activity, unless the mind we work with every day begins to understand the principle of mind, which we are constantly forgetting, overlooking, and denying, it cannot continue to guide us consciously the way we want to go or have to go. So when we go higher than our material thinking can carry us, we go to sleep. And we remain asleep until we begin the descent again into another chain of bodies. We cannot be conscious above the understanding which is involved in consciousness. We have the mind. We are the only form of life that we know visibly that has consciousness as we have it, that has the mental nature, has the power to say yes and no to any value that comes to it. It is the power, as St. Augustine also pointed out, that is the power of decision. It is the power to be right instead of wrong. It is the power to recognize virtue and not fall into pitfalls of ignorance. So ignorance continues to press in on us from the outside. An intelligent kind of trying to work its way out through us into the environment. And we have the troubled landscape that we see today. A landscape which is also a personal environment for each and every person. Now, if we're going to start this business of the mind, we must begin to think about what the mind would like to do. Now, the answer must be, finally, the mind would like to be right. The mind would like to do that which is best for itself and the combination of bodies through which it functions. The purpose of the mind, therefore, is to keep the peace, to use all of its energies for constructive purposes, that my man to develop gradually an internal integrity that is strong enough to withstand the pressures of external temptations. So we can start in with the knowledge we have a mind, and we will then begin to try to use it, and we may be surprised how little we can use it because we have never trained it. There's one division that we have that is rather interesting, and that is that we have objective and we have reflective powers. In other words, the mind observes what is going on the outside and reflects upon that in terms of the important changes that must be made within the self. In phrenology, the objectives, observing powers, are located in the front of the head, above the eyes. The reflectives are at the crown of the head and toward the back. And the higher the head, the more likely there is to have a reflective factors in the mind. But the mind takes what happens and says, what do we do about it? So let's take an example of this. The objective or observing faculties see a home breaking up. They see all the causes of this breakup. So in our present thinking, this neighbor is having this problem. Doesn't seem much we can do about it anyway. So finally we say to ourselves, well, I guess they're going to break up and that's it. And even it happens to ourselves, we say the same thing. Well, we can't get along, so I guess the thing to do is to break it up. Everybody get free again, make some more mistakes. We've made these. Then we go around and the reflective power has no chance to work. Because the reflective power would show that a crisis is an opportunity, which means it's a chance to grow. Wherever there's a problem, there is a tendency to avoid, but there is also the possibility of using the problem to solve an absence or a vacancy in our own ethics. So if we are able to quietly think through the problem, we can come to a better sense of growth. The reflective power is therefore the ability to thoroughly understand what is happening, why it is happening, and why it will happen again if we don't do something about it. So every lesson is either an emergency or a lesson. If it's a lesson, it is something to be faced. And if the individual is completely without reflective power, then it is something to be avoided or to be cast away without thought. Every day we have problems. Most of the time we try to get rid of them without thinking them through. Therefore, we do nothing to enrich the mental processes within ourselves. If we think the thing through and find the mind giving us the proper answer, we have then made a lesson out of a problem. And then the other way around, we made a problem out of a lesson. It all depends largely on our own reaction. So the reflective powers of the mind are those that take objective facts, so-called, or objective circumstances, and ensow them with realities. They show us why. They are great lessons. The lesson that we learn from an experience is far more important than one that we can learn from a book. We have to know all of the elements by quietly considering them. And if we consider them, we will reflect upon them. Now, Pythagoras had this retrospective exercise to help us in this reflection. He said that every day before we go to bed, we should sit down very quietly and review the day and say to ourselves, what does the immortal soul within me gain from this day? How have I grown? How have I done something right that I did wrong some other time? And why did I do something today that was wrong when I should have done something that was right? To study the day is to change a day from a happening to an experience, to a means of growth, to a way of becoming something more than we were. And by following the Pythagorean suggestion, we gain a great deal. Now, there are a lot of metaphysical disciplines being exercised at the present time, but not many people that I know of are studying actually a recompense for their own mistakes. We are not sitting down to try to find out what we did wrong. What we're really sitting down for is to learn how to meditate to get something we want. And this is the usual misuse of religion. This is how religion got into trouble in the first place. It became a matter of acceptance and a strength to do as we please, rather than an encouragement to learn to do what we should. So if we have a problem come up, retrospection is helpful. It helps us to think things through, to see what we did that we should not have done, and to give us the strength and courage not to do it again. Now, there have been several schools of thoughts on this concerning religion. The problem of religion as to how we should use it. Well, we have done with religion, if we look carefully, very much what we've done with everything else, politics, medicine, law, all these things. We have gradually transformed religion from a source of strength to a cover for weakness. We have gradually made religion justify what we want instead of what we need. Religion, therefore, has become a means of, again, blocking the natural growth of our internal integrities. It has given us the opportunity to call a mistake a divine experience and to pray to God to excuse us from faults that we should have corrected ourselves. And from experience we learn another thing, that God will not correct the experiences that we need to correct ourselves. The divine theory principle in religion is that it will strengthen our strength, but it will not pardon our weakness. The idea of religion as a constant forgiveness of something is part of the illusion that we are suffering from today. It is not that religion should excuse all our mistakes. The purpose of religion is to make ourselves strong enough in principle so that we do not make the mistakes. In every case, the miracle that we think of, the improvement that we dream of, comes from the strength of character. If faith is strong enough in us to make us do right, then we are working in the right direction. If it is merely a balm in Gilead to take care of doing what is wrong, then we have very little hope for gain through it. Now, we got the mind problem with science. What about science? Is science something that is entirely apart from life? Is science something the mind cannot control? Or is the mind to be ultimately a scientist? Is it to be scientific? No, unless we understand science. The word science has a note of exactitude about it we often think of. It has a sense of being infallibly right, but it is not infallibly right. It is infallibly skillful, but it is very largely devoted to the support of that which is not right, and therefore we cannot afford to accept it completely. Science, therefore, is means to recognize laws in things, rules. The scientist knows the rules of astronomy. He knows the rules of physics and biology. He knows the rules of medicine. There are rules and there are laws. Hippocrates, of course, was one of the first to develop the laws of medicine. But he pointed out then, at that time, that the beginning of healing, the beginning of medicine, was that the individual should correct the mistakes within his own nature. The individual who put his faith in the integrity of life would get a better healing than the person who wanted to remain sick but was too sick to dissipate until he got over it. All the time, the rules are the same. Hippocrates pointed out that in order to have the gods come and help us, in order that the Asclepian deities should bring the healing touch, we must approach them with prayer. We must approach them with dedication. And we must resolve within ourselves to make right the thing that caused the sickness, if it is within our power to do so. And whether it is within our power or not, we should learn to accept the healing power of improvement, of correction, of dedication, and of the building of a new life as a reward for the protection of the old one. All these things come back to an ethics system. An ethics system is the final judging by mind. Ethics is one of the highest levels of mental integrity. Ethics is something that we should all practice, we should all understand, and we should all recognize. And it makes no difference whether ethics is the government of the world, the government of a nation, the government of a city, of a family, or the government of the individual within himself and the body which he inhabits. Ethics is the basis of obedience, and it is also the proof of dedication. It is the proof that the individual is determined to do that which is right. And when we do that which is right, we have a much better opportunity to enjoy the securities of a well ordered existence, instead of being constantly torn apart by the pressures of society. So we say the mind now is, it is a mysterious thing. One religion says the mind is the slayer of the real. The mind is not really the slayer of the real. It is the mind functioning through a brain that is dedicated to selfishness. The use of the most priceless energy, the energy that we have, is something to be thought about. In other words, mind is one of our highest energies. It is the basis of our deepest relationship with life. It is the foundation of a new and better understanding of everything that makes up living. Therefore, when we abuse that, we abuse the greater good, and the abuse of the greater good is the greater ill. So we have to use the mind, but we have to purify it. We have to judge ourselves day by day and see how we're getting on. We have to make sure that at least a part of our life is devoted to something that is worthwhile. Now, the mind is sensitive to suffering. It is sensitive to the sorrows of society. It is sensitive to the wars and to the crimes and to the mysteries and miseries. But for the average person, there's very little he can do about all this. The only thing that he can do immediately is to apply it to the immediate environment of themselves. They can apply it, and sometimes, having applied it in this way, they are inspired to a larger and greater dedication. And every generation has a few magnificently dedicated souls who live to improve and serve. And they are the successful ones. The successful one is not with the money in the bank. The successful is with virtue in the great universal treasury of life. The more good we can accomplish with the aid of our thoughts and our dedications, the better off we are. There is no conflict between the mind and the emotions if both are normal. The idea that you've got to be kind of stony-hearted in order to be an intellectual is exactly what it is. If you want to be an intellectual, but that isn't what you ought to be. You ought to be in control of the intelligible realities of life. There is no reason why a scientist should not be just as gentle, just as kindly, just as thoughtful, and just as affectionate as anyone else. Learning does not deny any virtue. Knowledge does not cause us to be less in some other part in order to be greater in one particular. Therefore, the more we know, the more we understand life. The more we understand life, the more sensitive we are to the sorrows of life. And the scientist who is without emotion and without integrity is really not a scientist at all. Because a scientist must be heart and mind together, not one at the expense of the other. All the way along, mind leads the body, and the soul leads the mind. The most important thing we have to do with most of us is to begin our education where it should have begun when we were 10 years old. But the way we were live now, we never had a chance. Therefore, we have to pick it at any time at all that it comes along. Some of us may have to go to school in our 70s or 80s. Others may have to go to school on their deathbeds. But everyone has to do it. And somewhere along the line, we must all make this partnership. We must all use the mind as a guardian upon action, a guardian upon mistakes, something that whispers to us, don't do it, it isn't best. If we can gradually develop this protection, if we can gradually gain this power to discriminate, we will find that our enemies fade away and our friends become closer, and the people who don't understand will either gain understanding or drift to company like themselves. We cannot make people understand. But most people today are having tragedies. Most nations today are sick. Most families are broken and divided. And in these emergencies are the preparations for the 21st century. For the 21st century will come when we cannot endure the mistakes we made in the 20th century. We either get over them or they destroy us. So we now look back almost upon a century, almost, of mistakes that have been made, not by people who wanted to do it wrong, but people who never had any realization of what was right. They were all influenced and indoctrinated by mass attitudes. They were all trying to succeed because others succeeded. They were all criticizing because others criticized. And they did not realize that while it is perfectly proper to recognize the mistakes of others, it is much more important to correct our own than criticize someone else's. All the way along, we are building towards a new century, a century that is not far away now. We are coming to a time when, as Nostradamus pointed out, we are going to have to start a new way. He said that in the early years of the 21st century, the Paraclete, or the Prince of Peace, would come. And this Paraclete, this Prince of Peace, it must not be regarded as a person. It is the embodiment of a virtue, the embodiment of an understanding. It is a realization in the mind and heart of a better way of doing things. And when we get that, we're going to begin to put the world together again. The day of selfishness is coming to a close. The day in which security is going to be rested in material things is very nearly ended. We're going to finally find that we are all secure, only we don't know it. And because we do not believe that we are secure, we fight desperately to gain security by means that are totally insecure. Actually, the security we seek is in ourselves. It always has been, and it always will be. There will never be a moment when integrity is not innate, when there is not within ourselves the spark of a divine purpose. There is never a time when we cannot call upon something better than our present level of conduct, if we wish to grow and be better citizens and better parents and better members of society. Peace is in our hearts and always has been. It will be in our minds and always will be, and will never cease bothering us until we attain peace. Then we will discover we could have had it in the first place, only we were slow of learning, to use a phrase from the Midsummer Night's Dream. We are slow of learning, and the result is pain. And the pain will continue until the learning heals it. And the learning is that the mind should be used to help advance the good in all things, to keep the peace, to establish friendships and fellowships, and to do all that is possible to reveal the tremendous potential of human insight and understanding if we give it a chance. If we want to get peace in our time, we've got to educate the values of peace in our lives. And when we do that, we'll realize that we will touch within ourselves a tremendous reservoir of integrities. The mind has been waiting for ages for the chance to be itself, and it has always been blocked by the selfishness of little people. So we've got to get over that, and if we can do that, we'll have a pretty good time. Well, I guess that's all for today.